39. During the night, March doubled back and grabbed April by the scruff of the neck and flung it another week or two down the road. When Maniac slipped silently from the house at dawn, the only way he ever managed to get away, March pounced with cold and nasty paws. But Maniac wasn't minding. The reunion had been ecstatic and tearful and nonstop happy, and inside, he was pure July. He was half a block up Sycamore before he stopped tiptoeing. Minutes later, he crossed Hector. The streets were dry. An occasional scrap of chewed rawhide was all that remained of the worms. Hours later, Russell and Piper spotted him three blocks off.
Maniac, you're alive. We thought they got you. We thought they slit your throat. We thought they strangled you and pulled your tongue out. We thought they chopped your head off and boiled you. Yeah, boiled you. And drunk your blood. Yeah. And drunk your brains. You don't drink brains, you moron meatball.
Yeah, you do. Brains are like milkshakes, like Dairy Queen. You can drink them with a straw. You can hear them sloshing if you shake your head hard enough. Listen.
Hey, get off my head. Hey, help.
They were off and running. Maniac couldn't help laughing. In spite of their twisted, ludicrous impressions of EastEnders, the concern and the tears in their eyes had been genuine. They had really missed him. They had really been afraid for him. Two houses away, he could hear the thump, almost feel it, and Father George McNabb's voice,
"Lay him down easy." "I said easy."
Followed by Son John, "This easy enough?" Thump. Followed by a string of curses from George McNabb that fried the cold morning like an egg. The living room was hazy with dust. At the back end of the dining room, they were bringing in the cinder blocks. George and John had a handful of cobras, lugging and grunting them in from the backyard and dumping them onto the floor. Thump, thump.
"Hey, kid,"
George McNabb was pointing through the haze. 3 months and he still didn't know his tenant's name.
"Get your lily hide over here, start lugging these."
Maniac waved. "Later, gotta go." He shut the door and headed up the street. So they were really doing it. He had heard them planning it for weeks, making drawings, buying or stealing cement, trowels, a level. A pillbox, they called it. Once it was done, they'd be ready. Let the revolt begin. Let the rebels, as they call the EastEnders, come. Let them bust through the newly installed bars over the plywood on the windows. Let them bust through the steel door. They'll find themselves staring down the barrel of a little surprise. They squabbled over what the surprise should be. Uzi, AK-47, bazooka. "Why?" Maniac had asked Giant John one day.
"Why what? Why are you doing all this? To get ready, what else?"
"Well, what do you think's gonna happen?"
"What's gonna happen?"
Giant John swatted a squad of roaches from the kitchen table and sat down.
"What's gonna happen is, one of these days they're gonna revolt."
"Who says?"
"Who cares who says? You think they're gonna make an announcement?"
Maniac tried to picture Amanda and Hester and Lester and Bow Wow storming the barricades. "When's all this supposed to happen?"
John shrugged. "You never know. Maybe this summer."
He jumped up, grabbed a beer from the fridge, flipped it open.
"They like to revolt in the summer. Makes them itchy. They like to overrun the cities. This time we'll be ready."
And he told Maniac what he often imagined, lying in bed, the black sweeping across Hector one steaming summer night, torches, chains, blades, guns, war cries, marauding, looting, overrunning the West End, climbing in through smashed windows, doors, looking for whites, bloodthirsty for whites, like Indians in the old days, Indians on a raid.
"That's what they are," Giant John nodded thoughtfully. "Today's Indians."
The cockroach strolling up his pant leg wasn't the only thing making Maniac feel crawly. He shook off the roach. He moved to the center of the kitchen to surround himself with as much space as possible. But other people, he said, I don't hear them talking about revolts. Nobody else wants to make a pillbox. Giant John tilted the last of the beer into his mouth. Maybe when we do, he grinned, they will. That had been weeks before, and now the pillbox was underway, no longer an idea in the backyard, but a reality in the dining room. Now there was no room that Maniac could stand in the middle of and feel clean. Now there was something else in that house, and it smelled worse than garbage and turds. 40. He ran far that day, away from the town, letting the wind wash him. When he returned to the West End, he heard in the distance Mrs. Pickwell whistling her children to dinner. Though he had heard the whistle many times, he had not answered it since his first day in town. Now he felt as he had that day, that it was meant for him. This time, of course, there was a difference. He was no stranger. He was Maniac McGee, the kid who had walked barefoot through the dump near their house. The Pickwell kids cheered when he showed up and treated him like a legend in the flesh. Mrs. Pickwell did better. She treated him like a member of the family, as if she would have been surprised if he hadn't come on the whistle. Nor was Maniac the only visitor for dinner. Mr. Pickwell had brought home a down-and-out shoe salesman in sore need of sympathy and a good meal. As Maniac ate and talked and laughed his way through dinner, he couldn't help thinking of the Beals. How alike the two families were, friendly, giving, accepting. So easily he could picture the Beals' brown faces around this dinner table and the little Pickwell kids' white bodies in the bathtub at 728 Sycamore Street. Whoever had made of Hector Street a barrier, it was surely not these people. Fortified by his good time at the Pickwells, Maniac returned to the McNabs. After the East End scare, Russell and Piper no longer demanded stunts of him in return for attending school. On the one hand, this was a relief to Maniac. On the other, it left him with less influence over them. He could always extort a day or two in class from them with a free weekly pizza. Beyond that, he goaded them toward school any way he could. He organized a marbles tournament that could take place only in the schoolyard during recess. He tried reading to them, as he had to Hester and Lester and to Grayson, but they paid as much attention as the roaches. He took them to the library, then scrapped that idea after their shenanigans left the librarian blubbering and blue-faced. Then May arrived with its warm weather and blew away what little power he had left. The boys began again to dream of travel. Wood appeared in the backyard. They were building a raft.
Gonna sail down the river to the ocean, they said.
One day, he heard frenzied horn honking and screaming. He turned to see an ancient, rusty gas hog convertible rolling by, with Russell behind the wheel and Piper jumping up and down and shrieking in the back seat. By the time Maniac caught up, they were gone and the car was shuddering against a telephone pole. Another time, he had to run them down and haul them back to Dorsey's grocery, where he made them empty their bulging pockets of the 50 bubble gums they had stolen. It was a maddening, chaotic time for Maniac. Running in the mornings and reading in the afternoons gave him just enough stability to endure the zany nights at the McNabs. When he asked himself why he didn't just drop them, the answer was never clear. It wasn't so much that he wanted to stay as that he couldn't go. In some vague way, to abandon the McNabb boys would be to abandon something in himself. He couldn't shake the suspicion that deep inside Russell and Piper McNabb, in the prayer dark seed of their kidhoods, they were identical to Hester and Lester Beale. But they were spoiling, rotting from the outside in, like a pair of peaches in the sun. Soon, unless somebody did something, the rot would reach the pit. And yet he held back.
Oh, he prodded and persuaded and inspired and bribed the boys to do right, but he never forced them, never commanded, never shouted, because to do so would be parental, and he was not yet ready for that. How could he act as a father to these boys when he himself ached to be somebody's son? But then one day the boys went too far. He found them playing with the old glove Grayson had given him for Christmas. As if that weren't bad enough, they were using it as a football, punting it back and forth. Maniac exploded. He popped off for a good 10 minutes, got it all out. This was the last straw, he told them. From now on, it was going to be different. No more Mr. Nice Guy. When I say jump, you say how high. Got it? They got it. For the first time in their lives, the boys were speechless. Speechless as they did their homework that night. Speechless as they went to bed at 9 o'clock. Speechless as they went off to school the next morning. The piece lasted 3 days. Shock accounted for the first day. The second and third days were a new game called Obedience or Being Good. When the game lost its appeal, Maniac lost his power. He told them to sit, they stood. He told them to stand, they sat. Instead of going to school, they worked on their raft. Instead of doing homework, they played war in the pillbox. They brought their plastic weapons down from the hole and stationed themselves at the 2 small gunnery slots in the cinder block wall and blasted away at anyone moving through the house, not to mention imaginary rebels streaming through the door and over the windowsills. Stop! Maniac finally yelled and snatched the 2 red gun barrels protruding from the slots. In a moment, 2 more barrels appeared. Stop! He commanded.
Ain't shooting you, Russell whined. We're shooting them rebels. Bam, 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 pow, got one. Pow, bam, got another. Bam, bam.
I said stop. Maniac grabbed the guns, threw them on the floor, and stomped them. He didn't stop till they were plastic splinters. The only sound was that of the turtle scratching somewhere in the room. The gunnery slots framed the boys' dumbstruck faces. Russell was the first to speak.
Get out of my house! Yeah, sneered Piper. Out of here!
Maniac went upstairs, got his satchel, and was gone. That night and the next night, he slept at the park. The following day, as he sat reading in the library, in came the McNabb boys. They rushed to him.
Hey, Maniac, blurted Piper. We've been looking all over for you. You gotta come to my birthday party. I'm having a party tomorrow. What do you say, huh? You coming, huh?
Maniac couldn't believe it. The ugly feelings of the other day showed nowhere on their excited faces.
Come on, Maniac. You gotta.
And just like that, as he stared at them, the idea came, an idea as zany as they were. The words seemed to lift right off their faces, like sunburnt skin peeling. Well, okay, he said, on one condition.
What's that?
If I can bring somebody with me.
Sure, bring everybody. We're gonna party.
The librarian edged closer to the phone.